Welcome into WEEI Football Sunday. No Arcan today. He is ill, suffering from a bad case of pneumonia. I've been there. He's gonna battle through, though. He'll be back eventually. Today, though, it is me and Megan Ottolini. Megan, how are you?
I'm doing well. I don't know how I feel about this Megan.
Yeah, I don't know.
It just feels very formal.
Yeah, it's just, you know, energy's high, you know, giving everybody their full name. We got young Thomas behind the board today.
It is cold
freezing.
This morning. All of a sudden, it's December 1st.
But it wakes you right
it's
up.
It's winter. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah, see, I hate the cold most times, but like when you get up early in the morning and you get outside, you get
That's
that chill
I hate
right
it
away.
The most. I don't want to get out of bed.
It gets me energized. I'm ready to go. As soon as I step outside, I am full go. But the New England Patriots need to be full go today as they welcome in the Indianapolis Colts to Gillette Stadium on a chilly Sunday afternoon here. Anthony Richardson versus Drake May, Jerod Mayo versus Shane Steichen. Mego, what is your biggest take heading into this game?
This has to be the closest thing that you can have to a get-right game for the rest of the season. And what you did last week was so bad, just so dismal, that I think that you need to take advantage of a quarterback in Anthony Richardson that's been shaky, been benched, been trotted back out there, and be able to prove that you can adjust from the bad couple weeks that you've had. So you go through that stretch earlier in the season when Jerod Mayo calls you soft. There's another playing soft. And you're able to go 2-1. You got a couple rough games left on the schedule, as particularly the Bills I'm looking at. Like, that is a matchup that just absolutely terrifies me.
Yes.
And so I look at this game, and it's an opportunity for you to get right across different areas of the field, and I'm not sure that you have anything else like that on the schedule. That's how I see this game today. Can you prove that you can be competent, that you can get your stuff together, that you can, even down to Drake May, get through a game without a turnover? Can you do that? You know, I don't want that to come at the expense of big plays that he could have today, but I just want to see a vast improvement across the board.
Yeah, I think this is, without a doubt, the last legitimately winnable game that you have on the schedule. Like, when you look at this is absolutely, I mean, even the odds makers are saying it's only a 2.5-point game in favor of the Colts today. So this is absolutely a winnable, quote-unquote, spot, even for this New England Patriots team who has struggled. For me, I need to see a good run defense today. Like, you're going up against Anthony Richardson, Jonathan Taylor. This Colts team can get after you on the ground. You need to be sound in your defense this week. Like, you need to play your gaps. You need to be strong. You need to tackle. Like, they need to tackle. They have had tackling issues all throughout this season. That, to me, is one of the biggest things heading into this game, because if you cannot stop Jonathan Taylor, he is liable to run on you for 170 yards and never stop. Like, this could be another Jacksonville Jaguars, we're going to run it 19 straight times, because we know you just can't stop it. And that, to me, is a huge concern.
Yeah, from the defensive perspective, it's going to be really interesting to see, even early on, what their game plan is walking out there, because obviously they've struggled against the run for long stretches of the season, and you don't want Jonathan Taylor to make a mockery of you. At the same time, I think it's a worse look if Anthony Richardson, if you're able to make him look the best that he's looked all season. Like, you have had trouble containing quarterbacks, and you got to make a decision on whether you can make him beat you throwing, or if you're going to be going into man at any point and turning your back and letting him take off, because I could see that being a real disaster as
well. Yeah, I think the key, and I'm curious to see how they kind of defend against Anthony Richardson, but really it's defend the deep shots and stuff the box. Like, those are the two ways you can beat the Colts, because if you're going to force Anthony Richardson to throw over the middle of the field in that short to intermediate area, he has shown he has accuracy issues. And so he's just prone to give you a turnover or just misses receivers in general. And so I think that's kind of what I want to see. Is that how they're going to defend him right away? Are they going to allow him to take those shots down the field in order to try and stop the run? Are they not even going to load the box? I'm kind of curious what their approach is, because I think that's an important step here. And normally, they start well. We say this, like, I feel like this has been a thing now for 3 or 4 weeks. They start great. First two drives, I'm like, all right, defense looks good. And then offense makes adjustments, the defense does it, and you get torched. And that is what I am, like, horribly concerned about that, you know, end of the first quarter, Anthony Richardson throws like a 70-yard bomb and, oh no, now you're down 7-0.
Yeah, that would feel very much like the LA game all of a sudden when it just things, when they go off the rails for your defense, they go off in a big way and they go off the rails very quickly. Like it spirals out of control. And I think when you look at the game planning and the coaching, we spent most of the season being very critical of Alex Van Pelt. Maybe not critical in a way that it's like overwhelmingly negative, although a lot of people were that way, but just took a critical eye to everything going on the offense. And I think the defense, because they came into the year with this expectation that they were going to be the much stronger side of the ball. Even Gerard Mayo at the beginning of the season said the defense should always be ahead of the offense because of where they were starting from coming into the season. That certainly hasn't been the case. And I think, especially over the last couple of weeks, basically since that Chicago game, the decisions that DeMarcus Covington and the rest of his staff and Jerron Mayo, but I'm really thinking of Covington, make and how they adjust or fail to adjust in this game should be heavily scrutinized because we're at the point now where for the last couple of weeks, the game plans have not really made a lot of sense defensively.
No, they haven't. And then offensively, Mego, I'm curious your thoughts here because the Colts are one of the worst defenses in yards allowed per game in football. They are fifth in yards allowed per game at 375 a game. Is this an opportunity for the offense to pop off, do you think? Do you think there's a chance here that we get a big Drake May game or maybe a big Ramondre game at all?
So,
is there an opportunity
for that? I feel like when you ask that question, we have to define what is popping off for this offense. Like a typical offense popping off, you're thinking over 30 points. You're thinking over 300
over 25
yards for a quarterback. But yeah, that's what I was asking for a couple weeks ago. You've only hit 26 or more once this season. And really once since November of last year, and it was with Jacoby Brissett against the Jets when Drake May went out with the head injury. So, yeah, I think it's an opportunity. Their defense isn't good, the Colts defense, so you should be able to run on them. You should be able to look competent. When I say, like, this is the closest opportunity you have to a get-right game, that's with a lot of caveats. I don't think this team is ever going to, quote, get right by the end of the season.
Oh, sure. Yeah,
I'm not sure that you're going to get more out of the rest of the season other than being able to say, here's a couple pieces that we really like. Here are some ideas that we really like. Here's a little bit of an identity that we think we can build on. That's the closest thing that you have to success or making meaning out of the rest of this season. But get right would be putting up, you know, 26 or more points, would be Drake May having a very clean game that is also able to elevate some of these receivers where the chemistry has not been there for the last couple of weeks. To me, that would be popping off for the offense, even though that's not exactly like the sexiest definition of popping off.
No, it's definitely not the sexiest, but at the same time, you know, from a 3-win team, that's kind of what you need to expect. You need to see improvement against a Colts defense that is gettable. Like, this is an opportunity for you to have a good day. And I don't necessarily think it needs to result in a ton of points, but like, the offense needs to be really efficient. They need to not turn the football over. They need to move the ball down the field. They have to have those long, sustained drives, maybe a couple big plays here and there, because I think you can absolutely get some big plays on this Indianapolis secondary. They are not that good. And so it is going to be interesting to me today to see if Drake May can have one of those days where he doesn't turn the football over. I know I have not been as concerned with the interceptions. We will get more into Drake May coming up on the emotional roller coaster in about 10 minutes or so. We got Tommy Curran joining us today at 11. Fitzy will check in from the parking lot at 10:45. Andy Hart will check in today around 12:30. I think we might even get Wiggy's keys. I'm curious, Mego, what his keys are going to be to the game. I'm going to go out on a limb, say, stop the run.
Yes.
Top
to be
of list.
Fair, that's also where you started the show.
Also true. So shout out to Wiggy if that's the fact. But and then we'll have Pop Lock and Drop It to end the show today. All of that for you here on WEEI Football Sunday as the New England Patriots welcome in the Indianapolis Colts, Drake May versus Anthony Richardson. Now, Mego, do you think this game in particular has any impact on Gerard Mayo's standing as a head coach? Like, because the Indianapolis Colts are such a gettable opponent compared to what you have coming up on the rest of the schedule, is there an opportunity here for Gerard Mayo to really kind of fall on his face?
I don't think so. I really don't. I think it would, the way that this season is going and all the context around him, this isn't what I'm saying I think should happen. This is how I think it is. So I want that to be clear. I'm not saying this is how it should be. This is how I believe it is. That ownership has made the commitment to at least two seasons with Gerard Mayo as the head coach, and that they did not anticipate that it was going to be as ugly and painful as it's been this year, that truly being a 3-win team, possibly a 4-win team to finish out the season, if you're being realistic, that it would feel this bad in real time. I don't think that they predicted that. And I think it's been a little bit of a reality check. But at the same time, you look at the context around Gerard Mayo, you can make 100 excuses for why it is, where it is. He certainly had some bad weeks. Again, like, I think part of what we should be looking at is the game plans on both sides of the ball and attributing the adjustments in game to him. And when you talk about wanting the defense to have a big day, I think if you're going to grade Gerard Mayo on the performance this week, a lot of it is going to be, are they able to make the adjustments required? When you have a team on the other side that's not good, but has a couple guys who have the potential for chunk plays, and again, for that to spiral out of control for you really quickly. But is this like, will this game put Gerard Mayo on the hot seat? No. I don't think the seat is going to get hot this season. Maybe towards the end of next season, no idea what that will be like. Maybe, I don't know. But I think that they are really committed to him, and I'm sure that they think it would be a horrible look to dismiss Gerard Mayo at the end of this season, because they talk so much about how this was a handpicked guy for years and years.
Yeah, it would absolutely be a terrible look. And again, the issue, though, is as Florio said weeks ago now, like, he's almost at times talking himself out of the job. Like, he just sticks his foot in his mouth constantly, because prior to the season, once again, said, oh yeah, we'll have more wins than we did last year. Nah, I don't know. That's going to be a tough one.
There was burn some cash.
Yeah, burn some cash. Like, he has said they were soft, and then no, they played soft.
So,
and there's been a lot of things that he has had to say and then walk back immediately.
I think it's starting to become a pattern that people are starting to look for. Like, I think when Gerard talks and he says something that comes off as slightly spicy, he'll spend an entire...
Like, I can't help the guys inside the white line.
So if you watched or were at or listened to that entire press conference, he said multiple times, he puts it on himself and starts with him and over and over and over. And I think that message resonated with the locker room, which is the most important thing.
Absolutely.
Is your message
just
getting
like
through
soft
to the
comments.
Guys. Yeah, resonated with the locker room. But then if you're somebody who goes on social media, if you're reading national writers, that's the line that jumps out. Gerard Mayo is basically saying there's nothing he can do for his team on game day once they cross the line. Like, that's how it's portrayed. And to me, it's like, as long as it's behind the scenes resonating in a real way, the whole conversation, the whole message with the team, then I don't really care if, like, you know, Florio, or no offense, or there was somebody on ESPN or somebody else on Twitter that is aggregating this line and making it into this huge story. You know, I'm not even sure that that's something that the crafts care about, as long as it's resonating with the locker room. If they win, that kind of thing doesn't matter at all.
Absolutely.
It becomes, oh, look how tough he is. Oh, like, it reminds me a little bit of the early days of Ime Udoka, when Ime Udoka was calling out the Celtics and everybody was like, holy crap, he sounds like a hockey coach or something. Like, how are NBA players going to respond to this? Turns out, for all the drama that happened off the court, that team loved that guy, adored him. The messaging resonated. So that's what's important to me behind the scenes. People are going to pick apart everything he says going forward, because it's become a pattern now.
Yeah, and you're right. If this was a 6-7-8-win football team, nobody would care if he was putting his foot in his mouth constantly, because they're winning football games. It doesn't matter. And I think you're right. It's the most important thing.
They would
thing.
Be embracing it, though. They'd be like, yes. Oh, he calls it like it is. He said he keeps it real, blah, blah, blah. That's how it would be. It's got this stink to it, because they keep losing, and some of it looks like a failure to adjust in-game.
Yeah, and you're right. And so, I mean, you look at it, and the most important thing is that it is resonating with the locker room, and you look back at the soft comments, and clearly that did. The next game, they come out and they beat the Jets. Granted, the Jets are kind of, you know, not very good and down on their luck a little bit, but a team that beat you 24-3 just a few weeks prior, you came back and beat, and that was in a game that Drake May leaves with a concussion. And so I think that meant a lot just to the overall culture of what Gerard Mayo is trying to build. It showed that, okay, we may criticize him constantly. We may, you know, nitpick every single thing he says and really kind of take him to task, more or less, a lot of the times. But the guys in the locker room are listening, and the guys in the locker room resonate with what he's saying and connect with him. And I think that's the one thing that he has done positively this entire season is he has built that connection with the players. I don't think that there's any doubt that those players like him. I don't think that there is a mutiny. I don't think that there is any kind of, you know...
Don't the mutiny comments feel like, or speculation, I should say, feel like 1,000 years ago?
They feel like a million years ago. And when you look back on them now, it was clear that that was more about, it felt like it was more about the quarterback than it was the head coach. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think these guys were going to mutiny against Gerard Mayo. I think they were going to mutiny against
but
the Patriots.
I'll say this. The one thing that his messaging to the media and him stepping in it with a line and it getting blown out of proportion, in my opinion, I think one thing that does indicate that is widespread with the Patriots right now that we've talked about, Chime, that really bothers me is the messiness mm-hmm. and the disorganization
yeah.
across the board. And sometimes it feels like you look at it and you go like, are we looking at the same thing? Are we watching the same offensive line? Are yep. we reading the same stats? Are we rewatching the same stuff? That's where I think it's a bad look when he has those kind of one-liners that come back to bite him, because it demonstrates this lack of competency that I do think things just seem to be slipping by the wayside, because this looks like a whole franchise that was slapped together in the wake of Bill Belichick leaving.
Yeah.
And it just kind of goes into that messiness that's across the board right now. And so while I don't think it's the biggest problem facing Gerard and his job security or anything like that, mm-hmm. it is indicative of, like, it's just another symptom of the underlying mess.
There is a massive issue with disorganization with this franchise at this moment. And hopefully that can get cleaned up as the season ends and you head into the offseason. You can figure some things out, maybe get some people with some more experience. You, as coaches, Gerard Mayo, DeMarcus Covington, Alex Van Pelt, will have a little bit more experience and hopefully be able to clean a lot of that disorganization up if you hope to be a good team going forward at all. 617-779-7937 if you want to be in this morning, 37937 if you want to text in as well. This is WEEI Football Sunday right here on Boston Sports Original. It's Shime and Mega with you, and right now let's get you caught up with what's trending. It's WEEI Football Sunday right here on Boston Sports Original, WEEI. Shime and Mega with you this morning. And as you can hear right there, that means it's time for the emotional roller coaster. Mega, what do we got this week?
People are mad at the emotional roller coaster this
week.
They're bringing out the emotions.
The fury is out.
It's because I asked a question about the only good part of the team right now. And people are like, why are you asking about the good part? So the emotional roller coaster this week, if you want to find me on Twitter at Megan_Ottolini, is do you think Drake May has a turnover issue? Mm. Simple yes or no question.
Hot button topic.
Yeah. So no, of course, got 60% of the vote.
Smart.
60% say no, but a whole 40% of respondents, and this is almost 1,200 votes now, it's only been up for a couple hours, say that yes, he does have a turnover issue. And here's where I'm at. I don't think it's an issue for him right now. I think it could be. There is the possibility of an issue down the line. It's kind of like when you go to the dentist and they say, you don't have a cavity yet,
yep.
but we see a weakness here. That's how I feel. Drake May, he doesn't need a drill and fill yet, but it might be something in a couple years if he doesn't lay off of the Diet Mountain Dew, as I've been told from time to time.
Yes.
And so, look, he's got the interceptions, 7 interceptions. How many fumbles is it up to now? Is it 4 or 5?
I think it's... probably 4. I'll double check. But I think it's
4. I think he has 11 turnovers throughout his
right.
7 starts. You can fact check me on that. But I don't think, when you look at it case by case, the most important thing to me is it's not a lot of...
5 fumbles.
5 fumbles. Okay. So a little more than I thought. I thought it was 4. These aren't repeat mistakes that he tends to be making. Each is a case by case scenario where you can see the situation that he's in. There are a couple... There's maybe 2 that have been really bad, mm-hmm. where maybe he's trying to throw it away, or he says he's trying to throw it away, and it turns into an interception.
That Tennessee one was pretty bad as well.
But across the board, I think that there's a lot of context, again, around his situation where you can say this has more to do with protection, or this has more to do with the chemistry with wide receivers where they're not in the proper spot in their route or the timing. Like, you can look at a lot of issues where it's not necessarily a quarterback based problem. And I'm also just confident that he's going to grow out of it, that this is some of learning on the job, as you're seeing with everybody in the Patriots right now.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are concerned, and I think a lot of the reason the number is so high is that at this point in Drake May's career, he looks really talented. But yes, he has turned the ball over a lot. So now it's a matter of which road will be taken. It's a fork in the road moment. Are you going to be Peyton Manning, where I threw 28 interceptions my first year, learned a ton from it, and then was awesome the rest of my career? Or are you going to be Jameis Winston, where it's just turnovers are part of my deal? I'm a big game hunter, so I'm going to get you a lot of yards, a lot of touchdowns, but I'm also going to turn the ball over a ton.
I also give you the best mic'd up ever.
The best ever.
Did you see the one from him going into the snow game from Thursday Night Football a week ago where he's just...
Run it out. Just like another Thursday Night Football here. I'm so excited.
He's like, my first snow game. First snow game. Let's go. First game in the snow. I'm like, I can't. I know somebody who played briefly with Jameis and said that he was just their favorite person in the locker room at practice at all times.
Every time he's mic'd up, it is
authentic bundle of energy and optimism.
Even that like speech he gave about Deshaun Watson, like, I'm going to pick him up. I'm going to do everything I can to keep him on his feet.
He's amazing. Pain everywhere.
He is a walking soundbite. And for that, that's a good thing. And so I think that's where a lot of Patriot fans are. There's guys or people like myself who have been overconfident in Drake May since the day they drafted him and are always going to say, no, it's not an issue. He's going to figure this out. Don't worry about it. Yes, he's turning the ball over a lot now, but it won't be an issue down the road.
So here's something, and this is part of the reason that I thought of this today.
Sure.
Because it's been an expectation for him coming in as a rookie. We were like, okay, a lot of us expected turnovers.
Yeah.
And Mike Reese of ESPN wrote about this in his Sunday notes today. He said May has thrown an interception in each of his past four games, which is the longest streak among rookie quarterbacks this season.
Yep.
His 7 interceptions overall are the most of any rookie, despite not being named the starter until week 6. Add in 4 lost fumbles, the last of which came in a week 12 loss at Miami in which he didn't secure the football after a blocking miscue in front of him, and that's 11 turnovers in 7 games. And he goes on to talk about how Alex Van Pelt set this goal for him of not having more than 10 interceptions by the end of the season. I think it's probably going to be more than 10 interceptions.
I would say probably.
If we're being realistic, I don't think it's going to be like a crazy amount, but it's going to be more than 10. To me, I'm just thinking, is that even like a primary goal for Drake May? Are we still playing by the same kind of football rules of you have to learn how to not lose before you can win? Or is that an outdated way of thinking about quarterbacking?
I think it's a little outdated. Like, I think for someone like Drake May, who's clearly talented, like, it is evident to anybody, even the people who think the turnovers are a problem, like, can clearly identify, like, the kid's talented. It's just... He can make every throw on the field. He's mobile. He is aware of everything. He sees everything. But sometimes he'll make mistakes. And I think a lot of that are rookie mistakes. And so for me, the most important thing for a rookie is to kind of know your limits and what you can and can't get away with. And that is what he's learning a lot of the time. And I think that if he had any legitimate number one receiver, I think this number's lower. Like, I don't think that he would have better chemistry with that receiver because that receiver is just inherently more talented than anything you have. I think if he had a security blanket like that, the interceptions would not be as much of an issue. That number would probably be closer to 4 or 5 than it is to, 7, 8 at this point in the season. And I think that just comes with the talent around him. Those fumble numbers, I don't blame him for like any of the fumbles. A lot of them Yeah, I don't think maybe that the very last one where he was trying to stiff arm the guy and held the ball out, just like tuck the football and don't worry about it. But the one prior to that, like he got blindsided by Braden Fisk in that Rams game. That's not his fault.
That wasn't on him.
Like if you go watch the All-22, he drops back. His first read, I think it was Kayshon Booty, might have been Pop Douglas on the sideline, had zero separation. Zero. And it was not coming back to the ball very strong at all. So he was like, I'm not going to throw that. That's going to get intercepted. He wanted to tuck it. And by the time he went to tuck it, Braden Fisk was in his grill blowing him up. There's just nothing you can do about that.
So here's a little bit of the catch-22 with Drake May in this current offense, though.
Sure.
Is that he, clearly a lot of the turnovers, I'd say a lot,
yep,
are due to the dysfunction that are that's prevalent across the offense.
Agreed. Totally.
So it's either breakdowns in protection, timing off with the receivers.
Receivers not looking for the football.
Some of them are certainly him, and he's got to own a good amount of them. But a lot of them are a product of the environment that he's in terms of the offense around him. However, a big argument, not to play him early in the season was that this offense can't support a rookie quarterback who's learning on Sundays. Mm-hmm. And the argument that I heard from a lot of people was he's going to learn way more from being out on the field than watching Jacoby Brissett. And I agree. I just think the catch-22 is you put Drake May in, the whole offense gets better. And that's the most important thing. But because of the offense that he's in that's so dysfunctional, you have to admit that it is stunting his development a little bit at times, where it at least looks like from a statistical perspective, from the eye test, there are issues sometimes on the field where you go, well, that's a dumb turnover. And it's because this is mostly a dumb team or a team that's not talented enough to support the rookie quarterback. To me, that's the catch-22 that you're stuck in and that you absolutely can't put the quarterback in again next year.
Because then
I think it becomes a real development issue for the quarterback.
That may be true if you do it again next year, but like, this is what he was dealing with a lot at UNC last year.
And it held him back.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, because his junior year, he was
awesome. It can stunt your development of the quarterback when he's in these issues where there's just, in these situations, I should say, where it's so issue-ridden that it's gonna lead to turnovers.
Yeah, but my thing is it's more of a temporary stunting, right? Like, it's a temporary blocking of where you're trying to go, but eventually you'll make your way around it and go.
Assuming that you can get the right people around him.
Yeah, sure. I'm saying for Drake May in particular, right, as he continues to grow, like, yes, it may be a bit of a slower process because he has to stop at all these red lights along the way due to bad teammates and just bad offense in general around him, but eventually he's going to reach the highway and be cruising. Like, that's, regardless of who's around him, eventually he's going to build up, and it is imperative on the Patriots to make sure that that happens sooner rather than later by making the offense better, whether it's through personnel or the coaching or whatever, you know, whatever decisions you want to make, it is imperative that they do that sooner rather than later so that it doesn't take him 3 years, the end of the rookie contract, in order to be at full go moving. Like, I mean, you look at Justin Herbert, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was awesome out of the gate, but then he was good, but it was always the Chargers were never good. The offense was kind of meh. Everything wasn't working.
The coaching was really problematic.
Yep. And then all of a sudden, Jim Harbaugh comes in. There seems to be more stability. It's really good coaching. And he looks like he could have been an MVP candidate. Like, that's how, if he had a little bit more talent around him, which is like, oh, man, this guy's freaking awesome. And so I think that's the process the Patriots are going to have to go through with Drake May, is it's like, okay, he's clearly talented. Now it is on us to make sure that growth happens more rapidly than slowly and over time.
Well, yeah, and if you want to take advantage of the rookie contract, that's the most important part. But I also think that when you're looking at going forward, how to elevate Drake May and have him reach his full potential as a quarterback, as a playmaker, as being able to put points on the board, is you have to learn that you're gonna have to live with some of these turnovers.
Yeah, sure.
And on the other side, put somebody else out there for him that can be an eraser alongside with him. Because I think right now the most clear way that he can be the eraser for his own mistakes or his offense's mistakes is being able to take off with his legs and create.
Yep.
And being able to go off script and out of pocket and all the really, that's like the most exciting stuff about him, right? But at the same time, like, I know that this is obvious, but we've talked so much about the offensive line. If you want to capitalize on him, you have to give him a weapon who can be that vertical threat, who can be part of, like, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like, that needs to be a component of what you do going forward as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things too, with Drake May, is so many people have compared him to the Josh Allens, the Justin Herberts of the world. I've said multiple times, too, I think there's even more like Jordan Love to his game.
You know who I heard on a podcast? I think it was the Bill Simmons podcast, like a week ago. That was intriguing
to
me. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Did you listen to that?
Yeah. Nate's awesome. He works for Yahoo. He does a great job. He's son of Mike Tice, Wiggy's former coach, by the way. And Nate does a great job at breaking down the quarterbacks. And he was like, it's very John Elway-esque. And I hope it doesn't take as long as it took John Elway to win a Super Bowl for Drake May. But you know what? Winning two is better than none, I guess.
Maybe you want to go back and watch crush some Elway tape.
Elway was awesome. He was one of the most, again, of his era, like, he was one of the most gifted quarterbacks to have ever touched a football field. And so if that's what you're dealing with in Drake May, I think you're all right. And I think the building blocks are there for you to figure it out. And it's just becomes incumbent on the team to build around him in order to be a successful organization again, instead of just, you know, allowing him to try and pull crap forward.
Right. Is there anything that you could see from him in the remainder of the season where you would say, this is a real problem now?
More of those dumb interceptions, right? Like, I think throughout the season, there have been three interceptions I look at and I go, dude, come on. Which is the very first one, which is I attribute to just jitters. But again, it was just a horrible pick. The one where Van Pelt told him you can just throw it at the tuba player. He claimed he was trying to throw it out of bounds. The linebacker, I think it was Tremaine Edmonds against the Bears, snagged that one. And then there was one against the Titans where he got absolutely duped by a linebacker or a safety over the middle of the field, jumped the route, and he was screwed. Those were like the three where I'm like, come on, man. Those are ones you got to see and you got to learn and you got to be smarter about. If I see more of those replicated over the course of the season, that's when it becomes an issue to me. That's when I become worried. I'm like, oh boy, this is like what Mac Jones was doing now, where he's throwing across the field.
Well, that's
once,
fundamental mistakes.
Exactly. And that's the issue. If there's not major fundamental mistakes, okay, like I can deal with some interceptions. Taking shots down the field on a 50-50 ball that ends up getting picked, it's like, I'll deal with that. That's okay. You're trying to give your receiver an opportunity, and unfortunately, he can't come down with it, or you made a bad throw. It is what it is. Josh Allen did that a million times. Last year, had like 17 picks, but it's fine. It's basically just a long punt, especially if you're doing it on third down.
Do you believe in the rookie wall for a quarterback?
No, I don't. I don't believe in the rookie wall at all. I think it's actually the opposite. I think the rookie wall, especially for receivers, happens at the beginning of the year. And rookie receivers tend to pop off in the second half of the season and really kind of like explode in the second half of the season. The only position I think the rookie wall kind of applies to is running back. Outside of that, I don't believe in it at all.
So what do you attribute, like, do you think that it just is overblown when we look at somebody like, say, Jaden Daniels, who has clearly been having...
I think that's more of a Cliff issue than a Jaden issue.
I think that's more of a ribs issue.
Yeah, so Jaden was injured with ribs.
Because I don't want to believe it's a Cliff issue.
Yeah, well, the Cliff is real, okay? The second half of the Cliff is real. His second half of seasons are, if you go back through his time with Arizona, Texas Tech, they are stark. It's like he'll start 5-1, 5-2, and then finish 2-5. Every year, it's almost... It is comical. So I believe that's more of a Cliff issue. Caleb Williams, you're seeing it. He had an issue there in the middle of the season. Shane Waldron's gone. He got better. Matt Eberflus is gone. I wouldn't be shocked if he plays better next week. It's just, I think that was more of a coaching thing. Bo Nix has not hit a wall. He started really slow and has since picked up. He has like
four
touchdowns and zero
interceptions. Are we allowed to give Bo Nix a rookie wall when he's like almost 30 years old?
True. Fair point. He's almost as old as Brandon Weeden was. That's true.
Like, is he feeling arthritis in his fingers when it gets cold? I don't know. I think that most of the rookie wall, it's funny, the only quarterback that I think I would have said, like, I believe in a rookie wall for would be somebody like JJ McCarthy if he had played this season. Where,
sure,
when you're going through a really long, literal calendar year from playing in the national championship to the combine to the draft to OTAs, mini camp, training camp, and then immediately being a starting quarterback, I do believe there has to be a physical and mental toll that takes on you as a young quarterback trying to get up to speed in the NFL. But for the most part, I do think a lot of it just has to do with other teams figuring you out.
Yeah.
I think that's what happened with Mac Jones towards the end of his rookie year. The book was kind of out on him. And I think the exciting thing that Patriots fans should feel good about with Drake May is, well, you can contain him one way, and then he'll find hopefully in the future is what I'm saying, he'll beat you another way. And he'll beat
MacGyver's
you another way.
His way through situations.
He's a little Swiss Army knife of being able to find solutions. And that's not something that you've had in a quarterback. You've had to choose one or the other for the most part over the last couple of decades.
Yeah, I mean, in the small sample size you've already seen that, right? Where early he was running a lot because people were turning their back to him. He's like, I'm just going to take the yards you're giving me. That's the smart thing. It reduces turnover opportunities, and we're moving the ball down the field. Since then, teams have started spying him a little bit more, but they've been giving him opportunities down the field, and you see his passing yards number go up a little bit, and he looks better throwing the football, and he's bet in more of a rhythm. He's like, all right, I'll beat you that way, and then when you try to cover that, I'll run again. And so that's one of the huge assets of having a quarterback who can do both. It's one of the reasons why Lamar Jackson is so amazing, because all right, I'm going to throw for 300 yards in this game, or I'll run for 100. You decide how you want to lose.
Yeah, and I don't think Drake's going to be Lamar in terms of the athleticism that Lamar has, but he's already a better thrower than Lamar was when he came into the league.
Absolutely. 617-779-7937 if you want to weigh in. Those Drake May storylines are brought to you by Cars for Kids. The easiest way to get rid of your old car, donate today, and your car can be picked up tomorrow. Donate now at carsforkids.com. That's Cars with a K. It's WEEI Football Sunday. Shime and Mega with you. We'll get a check-in from Nick Fitzy Stevens from the parking lot at Gillette coming up next. This is WEEI Football Sunday right here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. Shime and Mega with you this morning on a crisp, chilly Sunday morning. But now we head to Gillette Stadium, to the parking lot, to check in with our friend Nick Fitzy. Stevens, Fitzy, what's up today, bud? How are you?
Hey, good morning, Shime. Welcome back. Mate, and hello, Mega. Long time no speak. Guys, I am happy to report that the pregame festivities are underway down here. You could hear a pin drop. It seems
literally today is quiet.
Not quite as loud and boisterous as it has been in past weeks.
No, it is not. It's like there's a new feature on the iPhone Patriots Edition called Library Mode, where you can just... wow, it is. Put it this way. Unlike most of us, after all the eating we did at Thanksgiving, the tailgate is light and thin. And I call this one of those one-tap Sundays. Why do I call it a one-tap Sunday? Because from the time I got onto Route 1 and drove the 4 miles down to the stadium, I tapped my brakes once.
Oh, boy. Okay, well, that bodes well for me when I have to drive down to the stadium in like a half hour. Fitzy, I don't know if you saw this, but I just saw from the Patriots' social media accounts that Drake May is rocking a Bruins Centennial jersey.
He's got one?
That was his game day fit walking into the stadium.
Love that.
He's wearing a Pastrnak jersey.
Nice fit.
What does wearing a Pastrnak jersey communicate to you about Drake May?
That he is all about scoring and understands that defense is not really an option. cheap shots, which is what most people are taking down here at all the tailgates today. That's smart. I mean, it's great to show that sort of like, you know, in-city sports-based cross-team support like that. You know, what's he going to do, wear an oar or something like that just to – that would get like some hard-o throwback vibes. Like, Pasta's the biggest star on the team. Drake May's the biggest star on this team. Probably about the same size as one another, too. I wonder, did you guys talk about this at all yet on the pregame? Is this the coldest game? Good morning, guys. How we doing? Go Pats! Oh, there's life at the tailgate, friends. Is this going to be the coldest game Drake May will have ever started in his football career? Only 2 years at UNC. Obviously, Chapel Hill does not resemble Foxborough in any way, shape, or form. And this is hardly the coldest game in mine. I mean, it was like 27 degrees when I pulled in down here. I'm wondering how he's going to feel, you know, the first time he's like, oh, gosh, can't feel my fingers. Let's go.
So I got to imagine in college that he did play in some chilly games at like Pitt, at
so
least,
he
right?
Didn't play it, so I just looked. In 2022, the latest in the year he played at Pitt was in October, like the day 2 days before Halloween. That's every other game he played was in the South. I don't know where the game he played against Oregon was in December. That might have been a bowl game.
Yeah, probably.
May be one of the coldest games he's participated in. But, I mean, it gets cold in North Carolina. It's not like it's 5 below today.
Dude, it doesn't get like – it's mortuary cold down here right now. It's like it's free. You know, Shine, when there's like too many leftovers in the Thanksgiving fridge, so you go out to the garage – and you just leave like a pot of potatoes or like a tray of stuffing out there. And you're like, hopefully the chipmunks and squirrels don't get to it because this will be nature's fridge. Like, that's kind of what we're dealing with. It's not too windy. You know, nothing's falling from the sky.
You don't need a cooler for the beers. You just stick them outside.
I gotta be honest, though, guys. Like, this was a big topic of conversation when Mac Jones was a rookie. Mm-hmm. And it was like, oh, he's a Florida, Alabama kid. How's he going to do? Is he going to be all right in the cold?
Because he was SAWFT.
Yeah, I don't worry about it with Drake because I feel like he's tough. Like, he's a big, tough kid. I'm not worried if this is 33 degrees out. How is he going to feel? The real feel is actually 29. He's going to be fine. I'm not worried about the cold.
Love this confidence.
I'm not worried about the cold with him.
Yeah, no, I'm not worried. I was just, Mega,
so
we
why'd
are
you
now
bring
officially,
it up?
I'm not sure.
If you're not worried, why'd you bring it up? I think you're very concerned.
Listen, hey, I'm not sure if you got the memo, but it's December 1st, and Patriots have been eliminated from the AFC East. Buffalo can clinch tonight, their fifth straight in a row. They're probably not going to make the playoffs. None of us really want to start talking draft yet, so we're kind of sifting through the morass looking for nuggets and talking points. I'm just kind of curious because, you know, my phone is pressed up against my cheeks, or so I think it is because I can't feel it right now. But otherwise, yeah, it's, you know, this has to be a baby steps day. This has to be a, you know, coming off Thanksgiving, let's stop giving them 5 yards every time we have a pre-snap penalty. Let's stop giving them the ball with strip sack fumbles or late game picks. This has to be, and that's why, excuse me, on the Sunday 7 at WEI.com, I titled it, "Today is a football IQ test for the Patriots," you know? Mm-hmm. If Gerard Mayo is going to spend time on Thursday calling Evan Rothstein to discuss how they would have handled the Aber flush out in Detroit on Thanksgiving Day with that god-awful mismanagement of the clock at the end of the game that cost that coach his job. Yeah, okay, so that shows that they're looking to make a little progress, that they want to improve their football IQ. So we need more I need signs on field. I need to see that something other than Drake May has improved. I need to see, you know, look, we're so far from Brady Manning when you see Colts hats, it's ridiculous. And no, May Richardson is not going to be the next big thing. But no, I need not. To see when you've got, like, a quarterback that, you know, can step on his back foot and flick his wrist and throw it 70 yards, I need to make sure that guy isn't accidentally wide open. Or when he takes off, that, you know, he's not seeing the back of the 25 and the 0 and the other secondary jerseys, that they have a corral and contain plan in place for Anthony Richardson. Because if they do, and it just becomes Jonathan Taylor versus, I like the Patriots' chance in this game. That's how you start building momentum and try to create a path of positivity for the finish of this season.
All right, that's Nick Fitzy-Stevens. You can catch him basically every evening during the, or most of the evenings during the week, Mondays, Thursdays with me, Mondays with Mego, here on WEEI and at WEEI.com. Fitzy, we appreciate the time, brother. We will talk to you soon. Enjoy the game.
Hey, listen, I'm excited to do the post game today with Andy Hart, Six Rings Post Game Show Live, after Colts had passed on EEI. And don't forget, tomorrow I'll be filling in for Arcand from 2 to 6 down here at Gillette Stadium.
Nice. Oh, ooh, you get to talk to Drake May tomorrow.
Ooh.
I know. I get to. Now, you know what's going to happen? He's going to call in because he's going to hear I'm going to be there and he's not going to be in person.
No, he'll come say hi to you. He'll meet you. If it was me that was there, he'd call in because he'd get too scared.
You guys are the best. Have a great show. See you
soon. Have a good one, Fitzy. Thank you. That's Nick Fitzy-Stevens checking in from the Gillette parking lot. We will get to talk to Tom E. Curran coming up next here on WEEI Football Sunday on Boston Sports Original with Shyman Mego.